Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Gentlemen, we took a week off. We recorded two episodes last week because, Brando, you went on a nice trip. We'll get into that a little bit later. But we got a lot to talk about. I mean, we're right into the NHL preseason. The regular season starts just around the corner. Let's talk a little bit about what the preseason's brought us so far. And, I mean, it's brought us a lot.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
We're, what, less than a week away now? Tuesday's opening night?
I believe Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, so basically one day after this episode airs will be the first day of the regular. It's weird. It's almost like a buildup where there's so much. There's, like, nothing going on at all. And then it's like, bam, season's here.
Yeah. Out of nowhere. Yeah, out of nowhere. But, you know, what are the things that you guys have noticed so far with this preseason that maybe has stood out for you compared to other preseasons in the past?
For me, it brings up the age-old debate about how long the preseason is.
Yeah.
And there are injuries piling up right now like crazy.
That's one of the sort of talking points that I wanted to get into. I'm noticing a lot more injuries this year, it seems to me anyway, than in the past, where players are getting kind of random injuries. Like, yeah. The Canucks, for example, Nils Höglander is out for like 6 to 8 weeks or something like that because he had to have a surgery done on a lower body injury, right? Like, it's just the randomest stuff. But in some cases, on some teams, like some key players are getting hurt. Sasha Barkov, right?
Yeah, that's a big one. There's a lot of expectation that Anton Lundell's going to take a big step this year because Barkov's out as long as he is. He proved his worth during the playoffs. He was a huge component with that Marchand line of them winning the Stanley Cup. So he obviously shows that he can handle pressure hockey. So I still think Florida's going to be okay even with Barkov out, to be honest.
Kachuk too, though.
Yeah, yep. That's true.
I mean, they're not looking so Florida-y right now.
I mean, it is the preseason, but you know, you just never know. A lot of times, those teams, they need that sort of catapult at the beginning of the season to keep their season strong going toward the end, right? Yeah. You need that sort of leverage so that you can lose a couple games in the middle of the season, right? Whereas in some cases, if you don't have that, it does hurt you toward the end of the season. And I know that from the Canucks past.
So I got about 15 names here of what I would consider to be fairly notable players that are guaranteed to not start the season.
Yeah.
Owen Power.
Wow. Okay.
Jonathan Huberdeau.
Now, we need to talk a little bit more about his injury, but we'll get into that maybe after you sure. Bring up this list.
Two players from Carolina, that's Jacob Slavin and Keandre Miller,
mm-hmm.
who they just got.
Just acquired, yeah.
Yeah. Jamie Benn has a collapsed lung.
That's insane.
That's not good.
That's not good. That is not good.
Well, and he signed a team-friendly deal in the offseason, too, to sort of finish his career as a Dallas Star.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting what happens with him.
You touched on Barkov, ACL and MCL.
Yeah.
In the same knee.
Yeah. So the downside to Barkov, I mean, the major downside to Barkov being injured right now, too, is it's going to affect his Olympic performance. Yeah, he's probably not going to play. Which is sad. You know, that's the first time in I don't know how long NHL players will be playing in the Olympics.
10 years at least, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here we are. So that's too bad.
It's too bad.
From the Rangers, Matt Zuccarello is going to be injured.
And their captain.
JT Miller.
Their brand new
also
captain.
On this list, yes. As well as our Artemi Panarin.
Yeah. So some key players.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Islanders, Canadians, formerly of the Islanders, Noah Dobson.
You saw Noah Dobson, you're like,
I did. My brain's wired that way. And Ivan Demidov.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And you know why? He got slashed the other night by an Ottawa player. I'll give you one guess, and it wasn't Kachuk.
Yeah.
You had a funny name for them earlier, but it was the Jack Eye brothers. Right?
No, that's not the one who did the slash, though.
No, really?
No, well, because they're on the same team.
Oh, yeah. I never read.
Cousins.
Nick Cousins. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Brian Rust is injured. Brandon Montour and Jared McCann for Seattle.
Wow.
Andre Vasilevsky and Victor Hedman.
However, with Vasilevsky, they are expecting him to start the opener.
Yeah, oh, so really? I didn't think he... I thought he was out for a couple of weeks.
They announced it. They actually picked up a goalie on waivers today.
Yeah.
But Phoenix, they did announce that.
Phoenix Copley, but yeah, they did announce that Vasilevskiy's...
Brandon's a liar.
Well, no, here's the thing. He is injured. It's a notable injury. However, it doesn't sound like it's going to be an issue for him.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's good for them, I suppose, yeah. And the guy who's never injured, Thatcher Demko.
Yeah. Wait, Demko's not injured right now.
Apparently he is.
No, okay, so what happened was yesterday they announced that he left the team for personal reasons. He didn't leave the team, but he didn't play. He didn't practice or play for personal reasons. And then they assured the media that it wasn't an injury. So from what we know as Canucks fans, that he's not actually injured. It's just some sort of step away from the team for a minute.
Okay. Last one on my list is Jonathan Toews.
Yeah.
Yeah, considering...
Again, I think it's only 2 to 3 weeks, but, you know, he's just trying to come back.
It's so tough. It's so tough to be away for as long as he was away and come back and play that high-intensity hockey at his age and with all the stuff he's dealt with COVID and everything. Yeah. It just, you know, it just is a challenge. It doesn't surprise me, but it's, you know, it's unfortunate because you want it to be a storybook ending for that guy, right?
So obviously a lot of these are probably kind of just freak accidents and freak injuries and just random things. And we saw it in Leafland with Robertson like 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Just went hard into the boards because he was forechecking and caught an edge and broke his leg or something. Like just freak accidents, right?
Totally freak.
Yeah.
But I just to be devil's advocate, I had two theories. The first one... Do you think injuries start to pile up because players are now already starting to get into the mindset of this lackadaisical preseason? As in, you know, starting next year, they're only going to be 6 preseason games, or is it 5?
I think it'll be less than that. I think it'll be 5,
Five or four.
Might even be 4.
Yeah.
So, you know, they already hate the preseason and think it's too long, right?
Yeah. There's a reason why the key players don't even play until the like maybe the last two games.
Matthews is playing tonight, and it's his second game.
Yeah, yeah.
As an example.
The Vancouver, I think Hughes played his first game yesterday.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it's just that's how it goes.
I know those star guys, they just have it most of the time.
Yeah.
But you'd think that there's some rust there. Like they, not even necessarily with the skating or the conditioning, because they take care of that with their workouts and their practices. But just getting into game scenarios and the hands, like I've watched a couple of preseason games and it's sloppy.
Yeah.
Just sloppy, right? Even from your top guys.
Yeah, it's mindset.
Nylander the other night, it was brutal.
It's mindset. You need to be able to see the ice. You need to be able to think the game.
Yeah.
And it's hard to just turn that switch on, right?
Yeah.
I know you're practicing and you're prepping for those kind of decisions and the those kind of scenarios, but yeah, like you really do need to get those preseason games in just to get the wheels turning, right?
And then my second theory regarding the injuries would be, is indeed the preseason too long? Quite simply.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing that they've been advocating for several years now about shortening the preseason.
It's tough to say that that's the case because a lot of guys got injured in like the first game they played, right?
That's true.
So it's tough to say that that's the reason behind it. I think really what it comes down to is, it is like you say, it is a freak accident. Yeah. You know, I look at Nils Höglander's injury and it was literally, he took a check to the boards and his knee just hit the boards the wrong way. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think more than anything, it can happen to anybody and it can happen at any time. I mean, we saw it last year during the regular season with some players too.
Kind of makes you wonder like how heavy the training camp is too, like in regards to maybe not every single team, but certainly there's the teams that are expecting to contend. It makes you wonder how hard the training camp is on the players before the preseason, because you have obviously players that are vying for the team. So, you know, there's that extra workload, that extra hard push to make the team. And so again, you're having the same players that have worked hard in training camp, you know, work hard in the preseason, and then, you know, star players are getting hurt maybe because they weren't as involved, but you have the ones that are not such star players that are getting hurt because they work so hard to get, you know, noticed for a preseason, then they get hurt in the preseason, and then, you know, whether they make the team afterwards or not is a question mark. Yeah.
So beyond injuries, which, I mean, obviously is a huge talking point right now, but beyond that, let's talk a little bit about how our teams have been faring so far in the offseason, or in the preseason, I should say. I mean, you know, we prepared all this time during the offseason to see what these certain players that our teams have picked up look like, what the line combos look like. And in some cases, you know, with my team, you know, we've got a new coaching staff that's putting together this team, so to speak, and the structure and all that kind of stuff. What have you guys seen specifically when it comes to the Leafs that has maybe delighted you or maybe disappointed you as well?
I'd say from my perspective, there's been a couple of standouts that weren't expected, which is great.
Yeah.
The first one I'll mention is Scott Laughton, where I think Paul and I can both agree that we were a little disappointed last year after the trade deadline. He just didn't get the chance to get his feet under him, so to speak. He didn't get a chance to acclimate to the systems, to the media, the new city, the fans, like everything. Oh, there's so many factors.
And it was right? It was all after the deadline, so it's, yeah. He's got to get acclimated fast, right?
That's right. And I mean, I believe he has a pretty big family. I think he has a wife and three kids already. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to uproot them and just there's so many things going on, right? It's cliche, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
So Scott Laughton standing out this preseason. He's also been given quite the opportunity. I think tonight will be his fourth game.
Okay.
Nice.
So they're giving him his reps anyway because I think they knew that he was going to be the player that they traded for eventually, and it seems to be panning out. My second standout, which surprises the hell out of me, but I'm super pumped for it, is that it looks like Easton Cowan has made the team.
Nice.
So they're not going to send him to the Marlies as of right now. It looks like he's going to play on the fourth line, which is a little skeptical for me. But the reason why I think I'm going to stay positive about it, at least for the time being,
until
you watch one period and you're like, that's it. Right? Us Leaf fans.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I'm going to stay positive about it is because of the line as a whole. And it's not just a throw together. It's not just throwing Easton Cowan in on the fourth line with a couple of guys just because they need to fill the roster.
Right, right.
He's playing with Scott Laughton and Steven Lorenz. All three of those players are nothing except workhorses.
Yeah.
All they do is forecheck. All they do is lay the body. All they do is keep possession. That's the entire thing they do. Plus, Scott Laughton's excellent at faceoffs. Hmm. So Easton Cowan's going to come in, and he's probably the hardest working person on that line.
Yeah.
And the other two are pretty damn hard workers too. And he's shown. He's played almost every preseason game so far. I think he's missed one.
Yeah.
And he's playing tonight as well as kind of a last shot to see. I mean, the offense is probably going to be a bit slow. We'll see. Maybe he'll surprise. But I've watched two games in whole with him playing. And he does not look out of place. He possesses the puck. He makes good plays. He can quarterback a power play at 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So good things are coming. I'm not going to get ahead of ourselves, but it's a step in the right direction.
Let me ask you a question. What is the reservation to having him on the fourth line in particular? Like, you think he's more of a top six or top four?
Top six. I think that it will hinder his offensive development.
Fair enough. Okay.
I don't think it's going to hinder his ability to play in the NHL because he's going to do the other things that he was drafted for.
Yeah.
Forecheck hard.
Yeah.
Be a pain in the ass. Get in guys' faces. He was pushing around Brady Tkachuk against Ottawa the other night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was hacking a guy at the bench before making a line change. Like, yes! I love it! Thank you! Darcy Tucker Light, maybe.
We need a graphic with like checkpoints for Brandon.
Brandon's checks for making the team.
Everything. Yep. Yes. Yep.
Aggressive. Yes.
Slashes behind the whistle. Yep.
So that's good. I mean, you know that there's a potential for him to earn some more minutes and move up the lineup, given the opportunity, right? Like if somebody gets hurt or maybe things aren't working on a line above where he's at.
Totally. It does create obviously a bit of a conundrum for the team, obviously in regards to, as we've talked about, the 35 players that are able to make this team.
Yeah.
They have a lot of cap tied up in camp at 2.4 AAV. They have Yarnkirk at 2.1 AAV, and then they have Robertson, I believe, 1.9 or close to.
Yeah.
That's basically $6.5 million tied up to players that are not probably going to make the opening night roster. But the other hard part about that, too, is that David Kampf is on a no-move clause, so he can't be sent down. That basically either puts him in a position of a... If they're going to keep two D-men and one forward, or if they keep two forwards and one D-man, guys like Henry Thrun, who has a lot of potential, possibly could be picked up off of waivers.
Right.
Yarncroke, I think, will be sent on waivers and probably picked up on waivers.
What's Thrun's contract right now?
He's $950,000, I believe.
Okay, yeah, so he'll probably get picked up.
Yeah, and he's a young guy.
Yeah, 24, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Robertson would be dumb to put on waivers. They should work out a trade for him. He's sadly, he's a great scorer, but the full game for him is not there, and and he'll be possibly a star on another team. He's just not going to be that star on Toronto.
There are lots of people saying that the reason why he hasn't been traded, and a couple of the Leafs logjam forwards haven't been traded, is because teams are trying to... exploit or
take advantage.
Take advantage of. There's an actual word. Extort.
Extort.
Extort is the word. Draft picks from them just for taking those players, not seeing them as a value that they can add to their team.
Yeah.
Which I can understand. Of course, you're going to want to try to do that, right?
Yep. I mean, we know the Leafs have done that to other teams.
That's right. In the past, for sure. Recently, actually. Yeah. So, you know, Robertson could probably garner a third round pick, so to speak. But San Jose says, well, I want you to give me a second round pick just to take him.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a fourth or something.
So now I guess he sits on the bench and does nothing.
Totally. Yeah.
It blows me away about the whole arbitration case and how they ended up signing a deal anyway, knowing the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, Cowan may have been a bit of a surprise, but that's still at least three forward options to choose from ahead of Cowan that you could put in an NHL game.
It makes you wish you were a fly on the wall and just sort of seeing what's going on in the head office, kind of going, you know, what are they talking about that's stopping them from making a move, or even in the case of like before going to arbitration, like what's stopping them from trying to make a deal that's worthwhile that they can trade or whatever, right? But it'd be nice to be able to kind of see what goes on in those situations.
Now, Berube is put together the lines that he's going to use for the Detroit and Leafs game that could be the opening night roster, where it's Nyes, Matthews, Domi on the first, McMahon, Tavares, Nylander on the second, Michelli, Waugh, Nicholas Waugh, Joshua on the third.
Nicholas Waugh.
Lorenz, Lawton, Cowan, as we just talked about, and then McCabe, Tanev, Riley, Carlo, Ekman, Larson, Benoit, and Stolarz expect to start because Wall is still away from the team right now.
Radio silence on that.
Yeah, radio silence. And they signed James Reimer to a PTO, which I love that he's back in a Leafs uniform. It'd be cool to see him sign him, but I think Hildeby needs to be given the chance over Reimer. I think Reimer's just kind of there as
insurance policy.
Yeah.
Totally. Insurance policy, and maybe helping him out a lot as well if he gets a game or two in preseason and can try to earn himself a contract somewhere else even. But that's the benefit of PTOs, right? They're free, basically.
Exactly. And my I guess one of my biggest concerns, I like McMahon. He is a really good player. He had 20 goals last year. I think he's miscast as a second line forward. I really do. Unfortunately, he was a ghost during the playoffs last year. A guy who's got a big body and stuff like that. If Cowan doesn't work out in the first nine games and they have that ability to send him down before having a pro contract kick in for him, pro contract year kick in for him, I could see McMahon switching down to the bottom line, and then if they hold on to Robertson, him going into either second line or Kampf being put into the fourth line and McMahon staying on that line.
I'm honestly, I don't think it's going to be too long. And again, McMahon's the factor here. Excuse me. I don't think it's going to be too long. And I'm even surprised it's not there already with Michelli on that second line.
Yeah.
Because of the other two players. Tavares is the workhorse. Nylander's the flash. Michelli's the setup guy.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's his skill set. And that's why he's there. And I mean, he's looked pretty good too. I'll be honest. He's no Mitch Marner, but...
So not to create controversy here, but I wonder if the mindset of a Leafs fan right now is frustration only for the fact that you have a logjam of players and you have no idea, you as the fan have no idea what they're going to do to fix that problem.
Yeah. I mean, they still have cap space, even with this $6 million tied up, so I'm not super concerned, as well as the players that they have locked up for next year. I believe there's only going to be three slots open, and they're going to have $24 million in cap space as of right now. So that mess that they've had for the last 6 or 7 years is slowly starting to become a bit of a wild card for them.
Yeah.
Let's just hope Tree does the right thing here and you know, like, paces himself a little bit. We'll see. It's a tough division.
Well, based upon Kirill Kaprizov's new contract, I guess Connor McDavid's making $24 million next year.
Well, that's right. We were talking about it. I think Quinn Hughes is getting $20 million. I don't see it. I don't see a situation where the players who are most important to teams that have contracts running out are not going to be paid very, very, very well. the highest of any, you know, players in the league. I there's no scenario in my mind as a Canucks fan that I don't see Quinn Hughes making at least $20 million after everything that we've seen the last couple of days.
I would agree with that. He's probably top three defenseman in the league.
Yeah.
Easily.
And I, as a fan, am okay with that as long as they can manage the cap after that fact, right?
Yes.
Coming off of the buyout for OEL and still paying $4 million into that this year. I think it goes down to two next year, if I remember correctly. So there's some leeway there. But, you know, it just you hope that they can manage it. And also you hope that the cap goes up enough that it's not so much of a burn.
I guess we'll know in 6 to 8 months or so probably a better idea of what that contract may look like. One, because of other contracts being signed between now and then. And two, what changes become of the Canucks roster throughout the season.
Yeah. That's right.
To me, it's crazy to think that that third line players at some point could be making $7 or $8 million.
It's crazy. It's really crazy. You know, or even like fourth line players making $5 million.
You know, and I say that looking at the landscape of professional sports, when you got like baseball players making $71 million and you got
or $500 million over.
How about this though? The contract that Joe Sakic signed with the Avalanche, and I want to say it was like 2004, something like that. He signed for like $7 million, and that was the biggest contract in the history of the NHL, or whatever it was, like, you know, 21 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's relative in a way.
You look at...
We're in an old mindset.
And I think that's it, too. It's kind of like, consider it similar to, like, inflation.
Yeah.
You know, everything goes up in price. But, you know, I look at, for example, like Luke Hughes, who just signed his contract with New Jersey, $9 million a year. What is it, 8 times 9?
8 times 9, yeah.
And then today, Jackson Lacombe for Anaheim, the same exact contract.
Apparently is on the same level, which I don't think he is.
I mean, in terms of what he means to the team, I would say yes.
Yeah.
Because, like, Luke Hughes is not... I don't think he's the best defenseman on New Jersey at the moment. He's projected to be.
Yeah.
However, I don't think he is. I don't think he's valued currently at the contract that he signed for. But I think the plan is, especially because they signed him for 8 years, the plan is he will be the number one defenseman on the team.
We talked about it last week where, you know, a lot of the contracts nowadays are starting to become percentages of what the cap is compared to what the actual value
Or projected to be in the case of next year.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. And I think that's really what it comes down to is they're all confident in the fact that they're going to have enough cap room to make stuff happen. And I mean, it's tough when you're a team like Anaheim because you're still bottom of the barrel at the time at this moment. I don't necessarily know they're going to finish last in the league or anything, but they're definitely not going to be a playoff team this year, you know? So it's tough to make those decisions at this time.
I know that Morgan Rielly had a bad year last year. But looking at some of these contracts, his 7.5 is looking stellar. If he can get back to half.
Consider the landscape.
I mean, like, this Lacombe kid was a minus 24 two seasons ago with a career total of 60 points.
How old is he? Like 24?
He's 24.
24, yeah.
So.
But I mean, and he is ugly. My God.
Not that we're judgmental.
I'm not a Robert Redford or anything like that, but.
Oh man,
this guy looks like he might have been on the Gremlins.
So let me just get a little. We're running out of time here, so let me just get into a little bit about what I've seen with the Canucks this year so far. It's been kind of an interesting preseason, specifically in that we're kind of seeing things we weren't expecting with specifically the draft pick this year, Braden Coutts. He's been stellar. He's been really stellar. Like. The comparison, and I'm not trying to get too far ahead of myself, but the comparison has been Bo Horvat.
Yeah.
In terms of a solid two-way player, he goes to the net, which is like something you don't often see with a rookie player. He makes smart decisions with the puck. He passes well. He sees the ice well. It's really kind of cool to see. And you know, much like you were talking about with Cowan, in that he's played most of the games.
Yeah.
He's played all but one game this preseason. I believe he's expected to play tomorrow. So it's been really, really interesting. And there's a lot of talk that this guy, again, picked 15th overall this past draft, is expected to maybe play in the first game of the regular season.
So has he been up and down the lineup, or has he kind of been cemented with a couple of guys?
Kind of been cemented. I'm trying to remember. I mean, it hasn't been the same guys because they've shuffled the lineups.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he hasn't played with, like, Connor Garland or anything like that. But The fact that he's in a position that they need on the team right now,
yeah,
it really helps.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that the talk is there that he will make the opening night roster. He's the youngest captain ever to be the captain for the Seattle Thunderbirds WHL team, and so for him to come into this and kind of cement a spot in the NHL regular lineup is kind of crazy at 18 years old for a 15th overall draft pick.
Are you going to be disappointed if they give him the 9 games and send him back to Seattle?
No, in fact, I kind of expect it, to be honest. I mean, you don't want to burn that first year if you're not going to play him. You know what I mean? Yeah. So for me, it makes sense that they would take that route. And I kind of hope they do, to be honest. And I hope he thrives in those 9 games, and then it makes them have that difficult decision as to whether or not they have to send him back or not. Yeah.
Now, we just talked about, obviously, the Leafs' expected opening night roster. What do you expect the Lions to look like for the
Okay, Ducks? So without having thought about it beforehand, I'm thinking probably we're going to see Kane play on a line with, I'm thinking probably, my mindset is thinking that it's going to be Hedl centering the second line with Kane on the wing, and probably when he gets back again, probably
Hoglander.
Yeah. And then Pettersson will be on a line with DeBrusk and Besser. And then third line, I'm thinking, is going to be Connor Garland. And then in the case of, you know, it could either be Bluger or Kootz, basically centering that third line. I kind of hope it's Kootz, to be honest, because like those kind of minutes are perfect for a guy, you know, who's just coming into the league. Yep. That third line minute, and playing with a guy like Garland will be just stellar. He's going to love it, because Garland's an amazing guy to play with. As you guys know, with Joshua playing on that line with him before, that's the kind of thing you need. You need somebody who can you know, play on a line well with you in terms of playmaking and finishing too, right? So, I think it'll be really interesting. After that, I'm not really sure, because there's still a lot of controversy as to whether or not Baines and Carlson make the team. They both scored a really nice goal last night, that I thought was worthy of at least another game, another chance for them to see. But and these are guys who just won the Calder Cup, so like I know they're capable of doing what is needed to be done to play in the NHL. But it's for me, it's hard to say what that bottom line is going to look like. But and then the defense just looks incredible.
What do you think about Vitali Kravtsov being put on waivers?
Kind of expected. He had a bit of a no-show. Not a no-show, but like, I don't know. I think he played well in the KHL, and then coming back, it's not the same beast, right? Like, it's the KHL is very offensive heavy, whereas in the NHL, you have to play two ways. You have to. Otherwise, you don't succeed. So look at somebody like Andrei Kuzmenko. The big thing with Kuzmenko was that he was an offensive beast in the KHL. Came to the NHL, scored, you know, I think he scored 30 goals or 29 or something like that. In fact, I think it was actually high 30s, wasn't it? The first year he played for Vancouver. And then nothing.
Something, I'm pretty
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and then nothing the second season, and then he gets traded to Calgary, right? And then does nothing, and then gets traded again, and then gets traded again. He's back with LA again this year. We'll see what happens, but the problem with Kuzmenko, and I think every team that he's played for has seen the same thing, is that he cannot play a two-way game.
Yeah.
Defense is his weakness.
That's nuts. 39 goals.
Yeah.
First year with the Canucks. First and his highest total since is 14.
There you go. So in a lot of ways, it's all about who you play with, right? It's all about who you play with. It's also about the energy you bring and the mindset you bring to the game, but you know, in his case, I'm sure he struggled a lot with the coach kind of breathing down his neck. Dude, you got to play defense. And that mindset can mess with you, right, when it comes down to it.
So. Talking about KHL players, we'll come back to the Canucks, but very prominent KHL player that came to the NHL this year is Arseniy Gritsyuk, who's playing for the New Jersey Devils, and they put him on a line with Hughes and Bratt.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's been showing some of his skills. He's got a really good release, really good offensive instincts. He might be a sleeper pick for teams in the regular season.
Is he just a kid, or what's his was he a free agent, or was he
was a free agent signing. Okay. So he had 44 points in 49 games for St. Petersburg last year in the KHL. So he's got some offensive talent. So it'd be cool to see, again, you know, you could look at guys like Artemi Panarin. Like, yeah. He came in and lit it up, right? Was put on, I believe, the first or second line for the Blackhawks. So if this guy, you know, who had a pretty decent season last year, can kind of show the same flair,
I mean, it'd be cool to see that. If you can play with a little bit of defense in your game, And you're a high end offensive player, you'll make it in the NHL. But yeah. Defense is key.
Yeah,
is key.
Really is key.
But you know, just getting back to the Canucks a little bit here, just to finish it off. I want to talk about the game the Canucks played against Calgary last night, because it was an 8-1 win for the Canucks. Scored 4 goals in the first period, 2 goals in the second, and 2 more in the third. It was a challenging game for me on the Canucks side, because I'm looking at the Calgary Flames last night and seeing almost the team they're going to be icing during the regular season, minus Wolf, basically.
Yeah.
So, like, talk about it on a Flames perspective. Like, what do you think is the challenge there for the Flames this year, say, compared to last year, where they almost made the playoffs last year?
It'd probably be just the same consistency, whether last year was, like, as an aberration or if it's an actual, you know, step in the direction of them becoming, you know, a better team than the one that didn't make the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Like I said, he was only 1 point. I think their young stud prospect, Zane Park, he's looked amazing during the preseason. And
he was aggressive last night too.
He was. Yeah. And he's quarterback in the power play, which they didn't really have a great quarterback last year besides Rasmus Anderson. Mm. Again, great player, but in my opinion, he doesn't always fit the role of a offensive stud for your power play unit.
Mm-hmm.
Zane moves like the wind kind of thing, and has got a great first pass. He's going to be, I think, a star, given the opportunity to be a star.
Yeah.
But I think for them, the Flames, it is just going to be playing the same game and taking the next level.
A lot of the talk last night, specifically when it came to the goaltender Prosvitov, I think was his name.
Prosvitov.
The big issue with him, he was the one they scored the 4 goals on in the first period.
Right.
The big issue that they talked about on the broadcast was how easy it was to score on his glove side. Just score every goal was on the glove side, and even against and I forget the other guy's name. Starts with a C.
Cooley,
thank you.
Yep.
Glove side goal. Every goal they scored on him too. Glove side. Actually, that's not true. I think the one that Hughes scored was a 5-hole goal. So, but glove side was a problem last night.
They could have had Connor Ingram, but you know, well, Oilers jumped in on that.
And even then, from what it sounds like, they're going to rely heavily. The Oilers are on Stuart Skinner. So. It baffles you as looking from the outside in. It baffles you. You're just like, how can you rely on somebody who's failed you year in and year out
multiple times?
I wanted to touch on one quick question for you about the Canucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you noticed anything fundamentally different in systems with Adam Foote?
Yes, actually, one thing in particular, and I'm actually a little worried about it. I'll be honest. The one thing in particular is that their plan, what it seems like, is they are going to be very offensive heavy, meaning they'll pinch a lot. They'll have a lot of systems where it's like run and gun, kind of 4 up, 1 back kind of plays. And it worries me a lot, because I think a lot of the times when mistakes happen, they end up coming back and scoring on your end. So we'll see how it plays out in the regular season, but that's definitely something I've noticed and something they've talked about even in the interviews and stuff in the preseason. Yeah. So it's definitely a little concerning. We'll see. I mean, it works. Last night it worked, but you know, it just depends on who you're playing, I think, more than anything. So, hey guys, I think now is a perfect time as any to talk about what's bugging Brando.
Because
I'm sure a lot of stuff is bugging Brando.
It's been piling up. Yeah.
Speaking of checklists.
I'll start off with some entertainment news, so to speak. And we're going back to our big old Dozy Donnie J there.
Oh, gosh.
Trump, Mr. of the United States of America. And
I like that Dozy Donnie versus Sleepy Joe.
Yeah, exactly.
And let me tell you, Joe is sleepy.
So, in a social media post on Monday morning, Donald J. Trump, POTUS, lamented the United States movie-making business, claiming it had been stolen from the United States of America by other countries, just like stealing candy from a baby. Trump also took aim at Newsom, denigrating the governor and writing that California had been particularly hard hit. Therefore, in order to solve this long-time, never-ending problem, I, Donald J. Trump, will be imposing a 100% tariff on any and all movies that are made outside of the United States.
Oh, my God.
Get stuffed, man.
Let me tell you something.
What are we doing
here? For those of you who are watching this podcast right now and don't understand what's happening, let me tell you, without getting too political here, let me tell you what's going on. It's a distraction. Yeah. Everything he does and says is a distraction.
Yeah.
So you don't think about the Epstein files and all the other nonsense that this guy has going on. It's all a distraction. And it's very, like, the point of it is to obviously get under the skin of everybody and make them get mad and get upset and be like, what are you talking about? Like, you're you know, charging tariffs on us again. And the idea is to distract you from all the other crap that's gone on. Well, and it's frustrating.
He's already done enough to help kind of tank some parts of the economy in the United States.
Some parts.
Yeah.
Or all, you know.
Canada is like is huge for Hollywood filmmaking, and
yeah.
And if you're gonna tariff Canadian filmmaking, watch the Hollywood industry start to plummet because
or move to Canada.
They can't afford to.
They'll move to Canada. Film, yeah. They'll just move to Canada.
Yep. Like,
that's what they'll do. They'll just open offices here.
Yep.
And Canada will make and distribute movies, and U.S. won't.
Yeah.
And then the U.S. filmmaking, and then California will be suffering because they won't have all that money coming in, and it's going to suck. It's going to suck big time for them. That's what they're going to do. It'll be cheaper for them to just come to Canada and make movies. Yeah.
Have you guys ever heard of Bruce Beresford? He's an Australian filmmaker, but he's done a lot in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Driving Miss Daisy.
Okay.
Yeah. Was one of his, I think, like directorial debut films. Basically, he made a statement to ABC News this week saying, I don't think he knows what he's talking about. You can't really put a tariff on sending a film over. It's not a box of soap or something. How would you put a tariff on it? He says what he doesn't want, what he, Donald Trump, doesn't want is American films being made abroad. He wants them all to be made in America because everyone goes abroad. They go to Europe. They go to Australia. They make films because they get subsidies from various governments.
That's right.
Canada, he wants to stop that and wants them all to be done in America. That's what he's after. But he expresses himself very badly. Release the Epstein files.
100%. 100%.
So
it's not going to happen. Ever,
everybody's like, what is this guy on?
That's literally what it comes down to. It's just distraction, distraction, distraction. That way they'll forget about the Epstein files. And I can move on with my life.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway. Okay, what else is bugging you, Brando?
Yeah. The NHL Network is in the process of releasing the top 25 players for this year.
Let me ask you a question. Where did Austin Matthews land?
Where do you think he should land? I'm going to ask you two questions. Where do you think he should land? And where do you think he landed?
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a range rather than a specific number.
Sure.
Top five, for sure.
Where he landed or where he should land?
Where he should land.
Thank you. What do you think?
three or five, to be honest. Don't ask me why I'm not putting him in four, but top five. I think there's the kind of the level playing field of Draisaitl in him, so he's either third best or he's fifth best. I'll put a defenseman where there's.
I'll go with that. Yeah. I'll agree with you.
Yeah.
Based on my reaction, where do you think he landed?
I think I already know because I think you shared it if I remember correctly.
21st.
I think it was 15th.
15.
Right? Yeah.
15.
And it was like. And if Quinn Hughes was 16th, I believe, if I remember correctly, and then he was... Oh, no, Quinn Hughes was 6th.
So
on that same list. I'm pretty sure he was 6th.
I'll read 11 to 20.
Yeah.
Okay? 11, David Pastrnak. Good player. Not better than Austin Matthews.
No.
Well, hello.
Maybe flashier, but that's because he's like... Pastrnak is like... I don't know how to describe it. You don't see Pastrnak scoring goals from the point like you do, or from the slot like you do Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Whereas Pastrnak, he loves to deke. He loves to take it to the net and score.
Yeah,
right?
Fair enough.
So he's flashier.
Flashier, sure.
I don't think he's a better goal scorer than Matthews is by any means.
The newest millionaire out of the state of Minnesota, number 12, Kirill Kaprizov, who had a total of 56 points last year, by the way.
Okay.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Number 13, Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah.
Not better than Austin Matthews.
No.
Sorry. Not a thing. Number 14, Jack Eichel.
Okay, come on.
Yeah.
Like, come on. That's ridiculous.
Number 15. Number 16, Braden Point.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's had like three consecutive 40-goal seasons. He should be up there. No problem. I don't have a problem with that. But that's not what we're getting at. The point is of where Matthews placed. Number 17 was Zach Werenski.
Mm.
Number 18, Mitch Marner.
Wow.
I think Mitch Marner should be higher than 18.
Yeah.
As you know, whatever.
I wonder, just to sort of take away from that for a second, I wonder if this is not a ranking based on where they think the player is in terms of quality or skill level. If it's a ranking based on what they mean to the team. Like I think Quinn Hughes is the most important player on Vancouver.
Oh, 100%.
And so for me, I would rank him, you know, high on that list. You would say the same thing about Austin Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be high on your list.
Yeah.
So my question is, are they ranking these guys based on their importance on the team and their team's importance to the NHL? Because if that's the case, obviously the Leafs would be high up there. Based on where they're at and what they mean dollar-wise to the NHL too. So it just confuses me that they would put him where they put him.
I think it's based upon stats from last year. But if they're going to base these kind of rankings on stats, I think it should be an accumulation of 3 to 4 years. And then your ranking kind of adjusts that way. Because
are they doing this ranking every year? Is this a year?
Yeah, they do it every year. So I think it's possibly based upon the stats. But
yeah, you're probably right.
Let's just say this. Austin Matthews at 27 years old is still on pace to shatter the most recent goal-scoring record scored by Alexander Ovechkin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Austin Matthews has played way less games, still creating that pace with Alex Ovechkin. So I know I'm a Leafs fan, but seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know. That really bothers me.
I'm with you. I'm actually, as a Canucks fan, I'm with you. I think that there's something missing there to put a player of his importance and his skill level and his, you know, his record.
And he's an MVP.
Yeah.
He's been a full
He's won every trophy there has been except the friggin' Vezina. Yeah.
Where he's at doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. I agree with you on
that. So, anyway, I really couldn't believe that. I could, even after a down year last year, I could see them putting him maybe like 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
But 15, give your head a shake.
All right, let's move on to the next thing that's bugging you, Brando.
This past weekend, there was a major golf tournament, the Ryder Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional tournament between U.S. and Europe. The behavior of the American fans in New York at that golf course over the span of 4 days was atrocious.
Yeah, I heard.
Completely egregious.
Now, I'll be honest, I don't know everything that went on. However, I did see the interview with Rory McIlroy, basically saying he'll never play in that tournament ever again, as long as it's in the United States.
Yep.
Which is crazy when you think about it, because there's lots of other places in the U.S. they could have it, where I'm sure he would be treated well. But from what I understand, was it threats or just stuff they were saying to his wife,
about his family in general
and his family. Yeah.
Constant heckling. At one point there was a drink. Arguably they say it was knocked out of somebody's hand, but there's other videos that show that it was tossed towards her.
Yeah.
They hit her in the hat and kind of spilled all over her clothes. And there was at one point, I think I've got it in a quote here somewhere, but Shane Lowry, the guy that actually basically ended the tournament with a nice putt, he actually like had to be held back by his caddy at one point.
Wow.
During the, I think it was the third day. That was before McIlroy's wife got hit with the drink.
Where is the security in all this?
That was the thing. Like, they increased the security, but they didn't do anything.
They didn't do anything. Yeah.
So, two-time USA captain and former PGA superstar Tom Watson had this to say, and I quote, "I'd like to congratulate the Ryder Cup Europe on their victory. Your team play the first few days was sensational. More importantly, I'd like to apologize for the rude and mean-spirited behavior from our American crowd at Bethpage. As a former player, captain, and as an American, I am ashamed of what happened."
Ridiculous.
"I don't think we should ever accept that in golf," McIlroy said, after they finished the 15-13 win against the U.S. He says, I think golf should be held to a higher standard.
100%.
And for decades,
yeah,
golf has always been known to be a gentleman's game.
You know
they couldn't quiet down fans. Like, yeah, they're holding up their quiet please signs, wasn't doing anything. And there was times where Rory had to come back from his swing to wait for the crowd to die down just so he can take a shot.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was, yes, a video on social media had Lowry being held back by his caddy as someone was saying something to McIlroy before he was trying to make a drive. And again, yeah, his wife, Erica, a beer was appeared to be thrown in their direction. And this is what bugs me the most. And I really want you to pay attention to this next statement. And this was made by Justin Thomas. And I think this epitomizes the state of the United States. I know that's a bold statement to make, but I really want you to pay attention to what I say here.
Mm.
U.S. team member Justin Thomas, after witnessing the verbal abuse directed toward McIlroy and Shane Lowry on Saturday, said, "We felt for them. It was unfortunate. Cam and I just wished," Cam Young, one of the other players, "and I just wished that we gave them something to cheer for instead of people to cheer against."
Yeah.
"I think that was kind of the main consensus of the last 2 days, that we weren't giving them enough to cheer for and they were just trying to help us win. I guess that's the way it is in New York." Pardon?
That sounds like a cop-out.
Like, take some freaking accountability, yeah, man, yeah, for you, your team, and your country.
Exactly.
You said, oh, it is what it is. Like, we didn't give them enough to cheer about, so they're okay to go and just throw stuff at people?
Yeah, ridiculous.
Man, oh, man.
Maybe that's the narcissistic personality of the United States, because they always claim to be the best, and they don't want to be the worst, and so they'll put the blame on someone else instead of taking the accountability blame and responsibility. Yeah, you know, and
yeah, couldn't believe it.
I hate to say it in that manner, but it's been like that for decades, and it's much more apparent now with the way that, you know,
it's being run, the entire country.
The governments run the country. Yeah. You know, people that they have a power in that country. It's and even an ours, actually. It's crazy what we see nowadays.
Yeah, it's tough. That's too bad. That's terrible. And I hope that something is done in the future so stuff like this doesn't happen again. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is there anything else bugging you, Brando?
Oh, lots, but we don't have time for all that.
Fair enough. Hey, gentlemen, before we get into our next segment, I just want to talk a little bit about the Vancouver Whitecaps. Last night, after I turned off the Canucks-Flames game, switched it right over to the Whitecaps game. They were playing in a Canadian Championships game versus the Vancouver FC, which is a league below, basically. So the players that don't make the Whitecaps, they get moved down to the Vancouver FC. They play in the CPL, Canadian Premier League. And they played for this championship. They do every year. This is Vancouver's fourth time playing for the Canadian Championship. And they won it last night on a 4-1 victory. Yeah, what did I say? 4-1. Their captain, Ryan Gauld, hasn't played in forever. I want to say a year. Bad injury that he had. Really bad injury that he had. Came and subbed in, actually, in the second half and scored a goal. And cool. They ended up winning the game 4-1. So congratulations to the Whitecaps and your fans. Four-peat champions, Canadian champions. So
cool.
The MLS season continues. They actually have a game again tomorrow back in the MLS. But this tournament is something that's a pretty big deal for them, and it's a pretty big deal for the team and their fans. So
awesome. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the Blue Jays. Major League Baseball playoffs. Before we signed off on our last episode, this man over here was preparing to go to the Blue Jays game. This was a very important game that you went to. Tell us a little bit about it as quickly as possible.
We're running out of time. What an experience. But it was really, really, really cool.
Hence why you're kind of sick from screaming and
shouting.
No, right?
Honestly, what I will say is that stadium can be and was electric.
Yes. I mean, you compare that to the game you went to before, complete opposite.
Oh, it was a complete opposite. I tell you, through six innings, the Jays were no-hitting the Red Sox, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
The experience with the company that took us there, I won't mention it.
We're not getting free promotions.
We're not doing free promotions. they brought us to a box suite. All the booze you can drink, all the food you can eat, They had like appetizers out first, charcuterie wow. and all sorts of stuff. And then they brought out the mains and oh my God, shrimp and chicken wings and sliders. And what else do we have? We had like a specialized mac and cheese and there were salads and tons of fruit. Like, oh my God, man, I just couldn't stop eating.
That's awesome.
It was crazy. And then of course I didn't even get to eat as much as I wanted to because the beer took up the rest of the room. So, I mean, nothing tastes better than a cold free beer.
Yeah, right? I bet.
So we had one and then we had several more. But I didn't go overboard, so that was good.
Good.
There was one point where I was, I think it was the sixth inning. And if anybody watching was watching the game, they know what I'm talking about. Varsho hit a grand slam to go up 4-0 on Boston.
Mm-hmm.
They had lost the previous two games against Boston, so that's why I was kind of like,
yeah,
I was apprehensive about the whole thing. But they came through, and like I said, it was nothing until that sixth inning when he hit the grand slam, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs, and I could not hear myself.
Yeah,
and I was there, man.
Yeah,
I was there with myself.
Right on.
It was so loud in there, and I tell you, I don't know why they did it, but it was beautiful. Before the game, the roof was closed because the weather wasn't great in Toronto that day. While we were getting ready for the game to start, they started to open the roof.
Oh, right on.
And it was like blue sky coming out, but it was like that dusk time. So it's just turning from like light to dark and it's beautiful and the clouds are just rolling through. Nice breeze came in because actually, and this was strange experience for me, with the roof closed, I figured they'd just pump the AC.
Yeah.
But it was hot in there.
Yeah.
I actually have a couple of videos I took. I may post to our YouTube channel later.
Cool, yeah.
But pardon me with the sweating and the red face, but it really was hot in there.
Yeah.
When they opened the roof, it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Why didn't they open this sooner? Because it's just nice breeze coming through. And it was awesome. And then probably like the seventh inning, the roof started to close again.
Oh,
and then was probably a good thing because the weather wasn't great.
Maybe that's why. Yeah, they probably are watching that stuff, I imagine.
And I don't know if I mentioned it on the pod last week or not, but I read an article a couple of years ago that it cost them $50,000 to open that. So that basically would have cost them $100,000 to open and close.
Wow.
That roof, that game.
I wonder why.
It's what's the mechanics of it, the electricity it takes to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an estimation, right? Yeah. Maybe it's 47,800. I don't know. But so an approximate. But.
So in the end, the Blue Jays ended up winning the game. What was the final score?
I believe it was 8-2.
Okay.
Six to two. George Springer hit a 2-run home run, I believe, in the eighth inning.
Got you. Okay.
Or it might have been the seventh. It might have been one inning after. But it was a really cool experience. Like I said, not only am I a big sports guy, but a big baseball guy for sure. And we got to see the game from a box. It was just incredible. And we basically had a view right down on the Boston side. So I could see the entire Jays dugout.
Yeah.
And then basically just a nice view of home plate.
That's cool.
Nice.
So the whole experience was amazing. They won, which was great.
And it was a meaningful game. Like they needed to win.
Meaningful game, yeah.
Well, the last four games of the season were all meaningful.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. The Uber ride home was insanely long. Oh my goodness.
I mean, just driving anywhere in that place, in that town is
We went from downtown Toronto to Markham, which is literally only about a 20-minute drive normally, and it took us like an hour and 20 minutes.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah, the traffic was
nuts.
Wow. So we've only got a few more minutes left, so let's talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. We know the Blue Jays, of course, clinched the pennant, which is incredible. They obviously clinched playoffs, then they clinched the pennant.
Four-game winning streak to finish off the season. They were on the same pace and level with the Yankees. And the division was important because if you win the division, you get to skip the wild card series, which Boston and the Yankees are playing in right now. By the time this episode releases, one of those teams will have won the series. But it gives the Jays the bye to go into the division series. So they're going to be playing the Yankees or Boston. And like I said, that game that you went to is the start of a four-game winning streak. The Yankees won those final four games as well. Because the Jays had won the season series 8-5 to the Yankees, they were able to win the division and get the bye.
Wow.
And they secured that like halfway through the year too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They had already beat New York enough times that they were talking about the scenario. And that's exactly what happened at the end of the year. They said if they happen to be tied at the end of the year, the Jays automatically are moving on because they beat the Yankees.
So you got 2 minutes, Paul. Tell me what you can tell me in 2 minutes about the playoffs so far.
Well, so far, you've got a couple of wild card series. The Detroit Tigers did win their wild card series against the Cleveland Guardians, so the Guardians are out.
I'm still not used to hearing that, Guardians.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Guardians. Chicago Cubs were able to beat out the San Diego Padres, so they are going on to play Philadelphia, I believe.
Yeah.
We're waiting on Boston and New York.
Currently 4-0 New York.
Yeah, whoever wins this game moves on.
The Dodgers won their series.
Bottom of the sixth. Okay.
The Dodgers, yep.
Yep.
So what's the series at right now? Because it's a best of three, right? Three. It's 1-1?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so the next, when you start seeing the division series right now, it's the Dodgers against the Phillies. It'll be the Tigers against the Mariners, Blue Jays against the Bo Sox or Yankees, and the Brewers against the Cubs.
Wow. Wow. So we've got some exciting baseball to watch over the next little while anyway. After this wild card starts, that's when the big games really start happening, right?
Yeah.
That the first round against for the Blue Jays against either of these teams, is that a best of five then?
Yes.
It is. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought.
Which I don't like.
I'm always confused about the playoff format for baseball because obviously we're used to hockey where it's always a best of seven for round one, round two, round three. I did like the play-in series in the bubble. I did like that sort of wild card play-in series. But I can see why they're hesitant to go that route. But yeah, I don't understand the whole best of five and then move to best of seven.
Yeah.
The AHL does the same thing with their playoff series. Yeah. It's very confusing.
What does your rotation look like?
Probably there's been a lot of talk of Gausman being the game one starter. I think he should be the game one starter because if he falters, I think Bieber is a good secondary option for your next game because he is lights out in terms of his pitching. There's been a lot of talk of Yesevich being the third. I think they're better to go with, even though he didn't have a good end of the year. Scherzer, I think, is still a better option based upon his playoff experience. Yeah.
All right, one more minute. Give me what else you got.
I just kind of wanted to say that this team feels a bit different to me than the team that won in 2015, the division. Yeah. That year, you had a lot of star power. Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Troy Tulowitzki, Russell Martin, David Price, Josh Donaldson, Marcus Stroman, Justin Smoke.
Yeah.
All like big time players.
Was that because a lot of the guys thought they were going to put the team on their shoulders back then? Like, is that what you see different?
They were able to stack their lineup. Anthopoulos did a really good job of trading and acquiring players. This year, you don't have Bo Bichette. He's injured. Vladdy's struggling. Your best hitters are George Springer and Alejandro Kirk, which there's nothing wrong with that. But collectively, their bullpen's okay.
Yeah.
It's just as a team, they've gelled and played hard. Their starting rotation's good. Probably one of the best in the playoffs, if I'm being honest with you, when they're all healthy.
Yeah.
And hand claps to both George Springer and Alejandro Kirk. Love that they had the rebound years that they had. Kirk had 6 RBIs in that final game of the year. I was really against his contract that he signed at the beginning of the year because I thought he just wasn't worth it, but he proved me wrong. I love that. We have one of the best catchers in the league.
Very cool.
Go Jays go.
Go Jays go, and we'll have more, I guess, next week talking about how things look after... by the way, actually, we are going to be here next week. We're taking next week off. It is Thanksgiving, so we're taking that time off. We will be back the following week with another episode, so if you were wondering where the heck we went, it's because we took a little tiny day off.
We'll probably have the result of the either New York-Boston / Toronto series.
Toronto series, that's right, yeah. Which is going to be a fun one anyway. I think it's going to be a lot of fun watching that kind of baseball. So, gentlemen, that's going to be it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for watching. And if you guys are wondering where you can watch us or listen to us, you can listen to us anywhere you can get a podcast. iHeartRadio, Spotify, you name it, we're there. Of course, you can see us on YouTube as well. We're available on social media everywhere at The Puck and Pod. Reach out to us, say hello, and tell us what you think of the show. Once again, for The Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.